This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Good morning, everyone. I'll just warn you, there might be a few people that are coming in. Hopefully that won't disturb you. So as I said, good morning, everyone, and welcome on this lovely sunny day. Hopefully the cold's not going to come back again, but I'm sure it will. To our fourth landmark Women Talk for the year with our special guest, Amanda Whiteley. As usual, before I introduce Amanda, if you could switch your mobile phones and electronics off to silent. And as the session is going to be recorded, if you could wait for the microphone, which I'll have, and speak clearly so that we can get your questions, so it will be transcribed onto the website. And then please join us, as usual, in the Friends Lounge on the ground floor near the cloakroom following this at about 11 o'clock. So now to introduce our speaker today. In 2011, Amanda launched Her Canberra, or www.hercanberra.com.au, a website for local women reaching an audience of over 70,000 readers per month. The website provides a resource which tells the city's stories, highlights things to do, fashion, encourages people to engage with their capital as a great place to live, and I'm sure you'll all agree with that premise. Amanda also brought some magazines along for you all today, which will be down in the Friends Lounge for you to read, so thank you, Amanda. She was named the UN Women's 100 Years, 100 Great Women list in 2013 for making a significant difference to Canberra in the centenary year and has won numerous awards in her career as a public servant. Prior to her starting Her Canberra, Amanda worked in communications in the public service and also ran her own public relations consultancy. She now employs 3 full-time staff and 2 part-time staff. Is that right? 3 and 2? Yep. She's got a couple more because it's expanding, as we would expect. And in her spare time, she teaches Zumba and chases after 2 lovely little girls. So please join me in welcoming Amanda to her.
A rather abrupt ending. Hello, and thank you for having me today. That was just our little brand video, which I guess tries to encapsulate a little bit about Her Canberra, if you don't know it, and what it, the function it serves. I always think that because Her Canberra has now got to a point where a lot of people know about it, and we have quite a large social media audience, that a lot of what people see is the shiny, happy, glamorous stuff that that goes with, I guess, having a successful business. But what they don't see is everything that's kind of gone before that. So today, I guess I wanted to talk a bit about my story from almost when I was a young girl up to where we are today, and a bit about the website and where it's going. I grew up in a little town called Tarcutta. I don't know how many of you know it. Yeah, anyone who's driven to Melbourne via the Hume Highway probably knows it. But, you know, it was a town of 300 people. And I grew up in a housing commission house there. My dad was a farm boy, but he'd moved into a job with the Department of Main Roads, which is now the Roads and Traffic Authority, after he returned from 3 years serving in the Vietnam War. My mum did everything from working part-time in the local corner store to driving the school bus after she gave up a career as a fashion buyer to marry Dad, which, you know, I'm not sure if he was worth that, really. I reckon careers as fashion buyers were pretty few and far between back then. I remember it as an idyllic childhood, although we had very little money. We had the run of the town, and my memories are of riding my bike around the streets, picking wildflowers near our house, pink lemonades at the local pub, and scavenging at the tip with our Auntie Joan, who wasn't really our auntie but was very close to us growing up. She had the coolest house because she had duck called Ducky Daddles and all sorts of great stuff in her backyard. My sister and I were born 15 months apart, and we were each other's playmates. We built grass houses in our backyard, and we massacred Barbie's hair. And we were far more interested in toy cars, I think. I was and still am very close to my mum and to my sister. Dad was very old-fashioned, and because we were girls, he saw raising us as mum's responsibility. So he was never really an active part of our lives, even though we lived in the same house. Looking back, I now suspect that Dad's inability to form close personal relationships was a result of the post-traumatic stress disorder that he suffered from after serving as an army ambulance officer at just 21 in Vietnam. It took a long time for him to actually be diagnosed with that, probably a good 25 years to be exact, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But apparently his behaviour is textbook PTSD, including the tendencies of veterans to build walls around or between them and their loved ones. So Mum and Dad's marriage wasn't a particularly happy one, and we walked on eggshells around Dad most of our childhood. He was never violent, and I still do love him very much, but he was very controlling. And so I guess the three girls in the house tend to stick very close together. Mum tells of Dad's vivid nightmares, having night sweats, his need for a radio next to him to keep him from falling into a deep sleep, regular panic attacks. So I guess I have mixed feelings on Anzac Day because, for me, the Vietnam War had four victims in our family, and I think that's a common story of veterans' families. For that, there was also really good stuff. I was always in love with words. I was a voracious reader from early on, and I loved to create stories and imaginary worlds. I published my first magazine called Wombat in year six, which had a print run of one and a readership of 12, which was the number of people in my year six class. I tell my kids now that my primary school had 42 children. She's like, what? That's like two classes. But it was brilliant. I would never wish for another childhood. Growing up in a small town, having a small school was just fantastic. And, you know, when I see a lot of people that I grew up with, and they've gone on to do great things. So, you know, growing up in a small town certainly doesn't mean that you can't go on to have amazing careers. But I guess that early magazine was an early sign of my ambitions in that area. We moved to Narandra, which is about 2 hours away from Takata, in the Riverina, when I was 12. So going from a town of 300 to a town of 5,000 was actually a bit of a shock, even though it's still quite a small town when I look at it now. But it did take time for me to adjust to going to a high school that was bigger than the town I'd come from. It was tricky, and I think, you know, coming into a new school in year seven when there were existing friendships formed can be hard. But I eventually overcame some self-esteem issues to become school captain, and excelled in English, which is probably, you know, not surprising. And my three-unit English teacher is actually one of her Canberra's most devoted readers, and has actually written some book reviews for us, which I find really special. I first moved to Canberra in 1991 to study communications at the University of Canberra. I'd actually wanted to do journalism, because I guess that's what I associated with a career with words and writing, but I didn't get the very high marks that were required to do that. So after a few months, I actually discovered that public relations was a thing that you could actually do and get paid. And I realised that all these things that I'd spent the last few years of high school doing, so, you know, organising fundraising events and writing speeches and public speaking and, you know, writing media releases, which I didn't know that was such a thing at that point for the local newspaper, that I could actually do for a career. And so that's where I decided to focus. And, you know, that's a decision I've never regretted, because while I love to write, I love the variety that whole spectrum of communications offers. And my PR experience has actually been really important in the growth of Her Canberra. And plus it suits my really short attention span. So university was great, but discovering beer wasn't so great for my body. And by the end of the first year, I'd put on 10 kilos. I'd had some pretty severe self-esteem issues, and I developed a pretty bad case of a pretty bad eating disorder. So I also lacked self-respect, so I wasn't very kind to myself for a few years. But, you know, that was a pretty hard time. Eating disorders, now I look, you know, when you look at the literature about it, they're most common for people who are high achievers and who are control freaks, for lack of a better word. And I think for me, it was not having that control over my weight that prompted that, because it was one way to kind of try and get some control over something that I wasn't able to. When that probably went on for about 3 years, and bulimics are very, very good at hiding things from people. But eventually I think things became better in my personal life, and so I eventually clawed my way out from that. However, you know, it's not one of those things that you just kind of put in a little box and leave there. It's even today I need to be very careful with not being obsessed with my weight. Today I'm probably heavier than I've been in 5 years, but I'm focusing more on, you know, putting good stuff in my body, being active, and also being a good role model for my daughters, because I don't want them to grow up with the same body issues that I had. On a side tangent, my girls both do samba, which is they're 6 and 8, which is very, very cute, which is Latin dance. And Latin dance is all about the booty. And my oldest daughter is built like me, so she's always going to be curvy. And she will say to me, "Mum, you've got a great big bum." I say, "Thanks, babe." She's like, "You just got the best booty." And, you know, for me, that I'm like, great, I'm doing my job if she can see that having a curvaceous bottom is a good thing at 8. Might change, but, hey, you know, start early. But look, back to, I guess, university days. Early in 94, after I'd just finished my degree, I moved to Sydney to pursue my career. I'd always wanted to. I had these visions of, you know, the glamour of the city. I'd spent the last couple of years of university travelling down quite regularly to do work experience with Australian Consolidated Press, who obviously, you know, published Clio and Cosmo and Dolly and all of those magazines. So I worked in the publicity department with them, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, as a 19, 20-year-old country girl, going to the Dolly Cover Girl Awards and writing media releases for Australian Gourmet Traveller Best Restaurant Awards were a dream come true. But, you know, I soon found out that the glamour wasn't all it was cracked up to be. I moved to Sydney to take a job with a company called Publicity Partners, which was a small consultancy that handled PR for companies like Yardley and L'Oreal and Ray-Ban, and it sounded far more glamorous than it really was. It was pretty much just, this is the days really before even email, which sounds crazy, but, you know, it was all phones and letters and mail outs and all of that sort of thing. But I guess that job taught me a lot about the superficiality of that industry, that I didn't fit in the right box for that industry, that it probably wasn't a good place for a country girl who couldn't pronounce Versace. And, you know, and it was also the first taste of a boss who wasn't supportive and who was very hard to work with. And that, I guess, was the first kind of lesson in resilience that I learnt. I was at home in Narrandera on holidays, I think late in my last year of uni, and I noticed that my dad was having problems with his legs, falling on several occasions. And I said, "What's wrong with your knee?" And he said, "Oh, it's nothing," because that's, he was a old farmer, you know, didn't go to doctors. I can't actually even remember him going to a doctor ever before that. He ignored the signs for months until he finally saw a GP, and they said to him, "You've either got a brain tumour, cancer of the spine, or MS, which, you know, I don't have to tell you, none of those are particularly attractive options. So I was dispatched to drive him to Wagga for tests, and, you know, this big, burly, 6'2" man broke down, and it was the first time I'd ever seen him show any emotion. And I guess that was kind of a turning point in our relationship because I saw the vulnerability within him and the fact that he was really scared. It took several years of tests to diagnose his disease as MS, and I decided to move back closer to home to be there to support the family. He hasn't had an easy run for the past 15 years. His MS is very severe, and he was forced into a nursing home in his early 50s, so alongside, you know, mostly patients with dementia. He's now had both legs amputated, and these days he's a far simpler version of himself, which in a lot of ways is actually, I think, a blessing because it's not an environment that, you know, still a relatively young man would really want to be in. And, you know, even though Mum and Dad separated several years before his admissions, she still goes and visits him several times a week, which I think says a lot about her compassion and generosity. So to backtrack a little bit, so I left the glamour of this Sydney fashion and beauty industry to come to Griffith to be near the family, and took a job as the marketing assistant with an organisation called Riverina Citrus Marketing in Griffith. And basically, that was an organisation that was funded through grower levies under the Marketing of Primary Products Act. And it was what it was aimed to was to get better money for growers and to promote the citrus industry. After about 6 months in that role, the CEO left the organisation rather suddenly. And at the age of 22, they said, "Do you want to do this for a while?" And I went, "All right. Sure, I'll give it a go." And, you know, I look at 22-year-olds now and I go, "Oh, my God, what was I thinking?" And I look at photos and I honestly do look like I'm in a school uniform some of the time and some of the things I was wearing. But there I was, you know, this young thing barely out of university, responsible for the management of a range of communication activities, policy making, industry representation and lobbying, media liaison. I suddenly had four staff. And I answered daily to a community of 450 male citrus growers, which was a whole lot of fun. And a lot of, you know, Griffith is a region where 60 to 70% Italian. So, you know, these were very traditional men as well. So I had to really fight to be respected. But, you know, by the end of that 5 years, I had lobbied and met with the Deputy Prime Minister, who was then John Anderson. I could stand up in front of, you know, a crowd of hostile citrus growers. I could do a TV interview. I could do a whole lot of things that I never would have done if I'd have stayed in the Sydney beauty industry. I worked 60-hour weeks for not very much money at all, and it was really tough work. You know, I couldn't go down the main street of Griffith without being hauled up for, "What are you going to do about my citrus prices?" But it taught me so much and it gave me so much backbone. But after about 5 years, I decided I needed a change. And so I did my own thing for about a year. And what I discovered through the time working with Riverina Citrus Marketing was that I was really passionate about food and wine. And Griffith is, if you haven't ever been to Griffith, can I commend it as an amazing, just a 4-hour road trip, spend a weekend. It's got something like 20 wineries now, great restaurants. And all the producers there are really passionate and they've all got a story behind what they do. And one of the things I'm most proud of, I guess, is being one of the people who created the Taste of the Riverina Food and Wine Weekend back in the late 90s. And, you know, that was one of those things that a friend and I, who were in our mid-20s, were kind of given free rein to do this thing. We had no money, as usual. But we put this thing together, and it still exists today in one form or another. All of a sudden, we had tourists in New South Wales throwing money at us to make these whole things, and we're like, okay, we'll just make it up as we go along then. But that was great because I got to show celebrity chefs around the region and you know, Vogue food and wine editors. And for me, that really was, it showed me how much I loved that food and wine area. If I hadn't run out of career options, I'd probably still be in Griffith because I love it. It's a great town. My parents and my sister and her family are still there. And, you know, we love going back for a lot of reasons. But in 99, I decided that I probably needed to move if I wanted to keep developing. Dad was settled into the nursing home. My sister was married. And I guess I felt the itch to come back to Canberra. So I applied for a public affairs role with the former Department of Employment, Education and Workplace Relations, or DEWA. It was here I met the man who would become my husband, Drew Baker, who I was just telling Francis was the product of a rather drunk Christmas party kind of thing. But hey, you know, 15 years later, he's now the CEO of the Institute of... How can you say this one mouthful? Institute of Public Administration Australia, ACT. And a rather lovely fellow. So, not being from Canberra, the public service had never really been on my radar as a career prospect. I remember in uni people talking about the public service exam, and I didn't really know what they were talking about and never pursued it. But I actually really enjoyed my time in the public service. I was there for probably 10 years with the same department in its various guises. But I think the key was that I probably did a different job every 2 years, and they were all interesting jobs. So I did everything from large-scale event management to video production to strategic communications to working with Indigenous employment. And I worked really hard, which is why, you know, I often get upset with public servants, public servant bashing, because some of the hardest working people I know are public servants. And I worked hard and I worked long hours and I felt like I was contributing something worthwhile. In December 2003, Drew and I were engaged on the beach in Noosa. And a few months later, we discovered that we were pregnant with our first child. Unfortunately, when I had blood tests, after we'd done about 5 pregnancy tests, I went to the doctor and said, "I think I'm pregnant." She said, "Well, have you done a test?" We said, "We've done 5. She said, "Well, you're probably pregnant." But she did blood tests just to be sure, or just to, you know, look at what there was in there. And she found an alarmingly high level of parathyroid hormone in my blood. Now, I'd had kidney stones a few years before, and they'd done all sorts of tests on me and never found out what they were from. Turns out this is why. So the parathyroid, for those of you who don't know, is this little thing that sits in your neck, and it basically regulates the flow of calcium. It's like those, you know, your heating and cooling systems where you set it to a certain temperature, and once it gets to that temperature, it stops. That's what the parathyroid does. It's basically, once your body's got enough calcium, it stops producing it. The tumour meant that my body had no signal to stop producing calcium, so it was just pumping lots of calcium into my body. So I had very stiff joints and generally feeling pretty bad. Now, that wasn't so bad for me. However, for a baby, for me being pregnant, that was quite dangerous because it meant that all the calcium, my body was taking it. So there were real health concerns for a baby to not have enough. So we were looking at having to have surgery on that in my second trimester. Unfortunately, I miscarried at 8 weeks, making the surgery less dangerous, but it was still obviously very traumatising. But I guess we sort of figured, well, you know, we got pregnant pretty easily the first time. It'll be, you know, surely we can just do it again. But we were very wrong. It took us another 2 years to actually fall pregnant. And while my professional, while my career went from strength to strength, I couldn't achieve that one thing I desperately wanted. So we eventually turned to assisted conception, and we were very lucky because it only took for the second round for us to fall pregnant with Olivia. But even though that method of conception was very sterile, I actually remember it really fondly because I know the exact day that our beautiful Olivia's life began. I remember it because straight after the procedure, we took off on a day trip to Wollongong and Berry with 2 of our closest couple friends. And I still, you know, I have this warm memory of us enjoying lunch at the coast and strolling around the shops. And, you know, it's something really special to be able to go, I remember what I was doing on the day that you were created. And it's such a happy memory because I know what came after that. So when Liv was born in July 2006, she doesn't like me calling her Olivia anymore, apparently. It's Liv or Livy. When she was born in July 2006, I threw myself into motherhood. I became the local playgroup coordinator. I got into scrapbooking. I read every book there was to read on motherhood. And she was a wonderful, happy, easy baby. And that, I guess, her placid nature continues today. I went back to work part-time when she was 10 months old, which was actually earlier than I'd planned. But I guess at about 10 months old, she'd needed me a little bit less. And I was lured back by the promise of an exciting project. And, you know, the women who... I've done the part-time public service thing and a part-time mother thing, and it's hard. It's hard. You know, the dropping off at childcare and going and doing your work and trying to get through everything that you would normally in 5 days and 3 days or whatever it is, and going and pick a child up and getting them dinner and getting them to bed. People that do it full-time don't know how they do it. But, you know, for me, I loved work. I loved being able to juggle or balance being a mum and I guess being able to exercise my brain and have some social contact. And so I was working in an area there about internal communication and culture, which I guess is something that was the basis of the same sort of principles behind what we do with Her Canberra. And I love working in that area. So after, I guess, our experience trying to conceive Olivia, I wasn't even really keen to have another child, even though it had always been the plan to have two. I was thinking, I've got this perfect one. I don't want to do that again. That was too hard. But Drew really wanted another, and I went, fine, I'll try, but if it's going to be hard again, I'm not interested. And he said, okay. And then I was just one of those really annoying people that literally fell pregnant the instant I stopped using the pill. But it was a strange pregnancy. I didn't know I was pregnant until I was 8 weeks. I actually had a moment at work where I was sitting there going, God, I feel sick. What? And then I went, oh. Last time I felt like this was morning sickness. And I remember going to the doctor when I was apparently 7 weeks and I had this stomach and I was going, it's either more than one in there or there's something wrong with these dates kind of thing. And I remember sitting in the doctor and going, yeah, look, I came to see you because I'm supposed to be 7 weeks pregnant, but this. And she went, ooh. So they shipped me off for an ultrasound and it turned out that I was actually 12 weeks almost. So then I, at 14 weeks, had a scare and I thought that that was all over, Red Rover. But she was determined. And I'd planned to work right up to 38 weeks. But life had other things in store for me. At 25 weeks pregnant, I felt unwell, so I had a day off. And then around 2 a.m. the morning after, I woke up and I was bleeding. So I didn't know what to do. I rang my obstetrician and said, what do I do? She said, go to the hospital. And so I, you know, was driving in the middle of the night while Drew stayed with Olivia. And, you know, was obviously really scared until they strapped on the monitoring to find a strong heartbeat. And, you know, denial's a wonderful thing. I was sitting there texting work going, oh, look, I probably won't be in tomorrow, but I'm sure I'll be in a couple of days. And, you know, they're horrified texts back like, you crazy woman. But I was basically told you're here for another 2 days. As it was, I ended up being in there for 6 weeks on bed rest because they didn't know what was causing the bleeding. So even though I was 5 minutes drive from the hospital, door to door, they didn't know what was going on. They didn't want to take the chance. So I needed to stay on the ward, which, you know, with a little girl who wasn't quite two, that was just, it was so hard. You know, when they're not quite two, their attention span's quite small. So I'd literally see her for half an hour a day and we'd sort of, you know, ply her with Dora the Explorer videos so that I could just cuddle for a bit longer. And I, you know, but I thought that that was the hardest thing. But then there was worse to come because I think in hindsight, I would have stayed there another year if I could have saved the trauma that was ahead. I went into labour at 30 weeks and 3 days, And Sophia was born weighing 1.43 kilos or 3.3 pounds by the old scale. She had to be intubated. She had various health concerns. She was on oxygen for 9 weeks, couldn't get her off it. She had 2 blood transfusions, and there were days that I honestly thought she would never come home. But after 10 weeks in NICU, 7 days after her due date, she came home, and we realised that that was actually only just the start of her journey. I remember a nurse saying to me, "If this is your first child, I'd be really worried about you because there's going to be some tough times ahead," she said, "but you'll be all right." So because I'd had an infection of the placenta, which, as it turns out, they why I was bleeding, that's usually the treatment for that is to deliver the baby, because it's obviously not a great environment for a baby to be if you've got an infection. So the fact that she hung in there for 5 weeks and was able to have steroids to help her lungs grow and all that sort of thing is probably the difference between her being alive today and her not having survived. She's an amazing little fighter, and that feistiness stood her in good stead for the next 2 years. We spent a lot of time in hospital due to her chronic lung disease. Essentially, what was a cold for another kid would mean a hospital admission and oxygen for her. And let me tell you, it's a special kind of hell being in a four-birth room with 4 kids under 2 for 2 weeks. So I can pretty much do anything now. But, you know, it was during this time I was pretty much at home for 2 years because she wasn't able to go to childcare because she would get sick. And it took me a long time to get my head around this. I was like, can we get a nanny? You know, I can't just stay home for 2 years, you know. It took me a long time to get my head around that. But when I did, when I kind of relaxed into it and realised that there were more important things than strapping on the corporate armour and going into work and proving yourself that way, that's kind of when things turned around for me. But it was during that time that I discovered the internet as a source of connection and community because, you know, I was lonely. We couldn't go out much during winter. And I'd gone from this busy part-time role surrounded by people to pretty much just being housebound with me and 2 little ones. And although I adored them, I was really quite lonely and in need of that intellectual stimulation. But then I discovered this amazing community that was right in front of me, or through my computer screen to be precise. I discovered Mamma Mia, which is one of the most popular women's websites in Australia, back when it was just a tiny little website with about 30 commenters. I think they now have something like 1 million readers a week or something. It's ridiculous. And it was about at the same time that Twitter or social media exploded. So I'd found myself having made a group of online friends, and I guess a lot of them were in the same boat. You know, they were stay-at-home mums and they were looking for that connection as well. And somehow I became friends with Mia Friedman, who runs Mamma Mia herself, just on Twitter, as you do. And so we struck up this friendship, and within a few months she'd asked myself, along with another couple of women, Kerry Sackville, who's now a well-known blogger and author, and Lana Hershkovitz, who went on to become managing editor of Mamma Mia and iVillage, to become voluntary editorial staff. My primary role was that of moderator, which was basically to calm the conversations when they got out of hand, which they often did, and to keep out the trolls, as they call them. But after about a year, I'd had enough because a job that I didn't get any money from was taking over my life. The negativity from the comments was so personal and so just causing me so much anxiety about, you know, if I was out, I'm thinking, oh my God, what's happening in the comments? I really should get back there. So that I wasn't actually having a life at all. So I decided to step back because who would have thought that a group of women could be so judgmental and downright nasty about everything from birth choices, you know, oh, you had a cesarean, well, you didn't really give birth, or, you know, to kids' parties, I mean, to childcare, and even parents with prams, parking spots. It was ridiculous. So I thought, you know, I just need to leave the drama behind for a while and just get back into real life. So I decided to get fit and healthy and, you know, rediscover Canberra or my home. At about the same time, Sophia had started to get much better. So I started to try and find things to do with the kids, places to eat, you know, kid-friendly places to take them. And, you know, I was, I guess the way that I found information had changed. I was now very much web-enabled. So I was Googling these, you know, kid-friendly places to eat in Canberra. I couldn't find anything. I was like, perhaps I should make something. Because I thought I'd met actually quite a few Canberra women through Mamma Mia, so why wasn't I actually meeting them in Canberra? So I sat on this idea for a few months because, as I mentioned earlier, I have a very short attention span, and I'm impetuous and I get excited by ideas and I throw all my energy into that, and then I get bored and I move into this one. So I guess I wanted to make sure that this one had legs. But the idea actually burned brighter the longer I left it. So I wrote out a very half-assed business plan, because that's not the way I tend to roll. And I took my husband out to dinner and I said, I have an idea. I sat it in front of him. Now, he's the voice of reason in our relationship and he often shoots me down. So I knew that if it was a crap idea, he'd tell me. But he didn't. He said, I think it's great. I think you should do it. And I went, oh, all right then. So I did. And I found local experts and I cajoled friends into writing for me. I guess I always saw this as a multi-contributor site. It wasn't ever designed to just be about me. It was always designed to feature voices from Canberra women, because I'm not a nutritional expert. I like fashion, but I don't particularly know a lot about it. I'm, you know, not a fitness, qualified fitness instructor either. So I wanted to pull in people who actually did know what they were talking about in these areas. At the core, my vision was to provide a virtual community for local women, but I wanted also to extend that into real life. I wanted to share local knowledge and encourage readers to do the same because, you know, there are so many great things happening in Canberra, but we're not great at telling people about them. Even now, you know, I like to think that we're pretty much across a lot of the stuff that's going on, but we still miss things and we still see something come up in social media that's been on the weekend, and we're like, oh, why didn't we know about that? There's just, so I guess what we've tried to do is to bring all that together in one place that people know they can go here and they can find things out. It was also really important for me to give people, local women, a place to connect. And if they wanted to extend that into real life friendships. From personal experience, I know that Canberra can be a hard place to meet people and that sometimes our life circumstances can be isolating. For many of us, moving here from somewhere else or from the workforce, you know, change in circumstances into being a stay-at-home mum or a work-at-home mum, and being able to connect on that intellectual, social and emotional level online can make a huge difference. I wanted her Canberra to be as diverse as our Canberra women, and I wanted to tap into the local talent we have here. So we have women aged from 19 to 50-something. I haven't asked Rosie her exact age because that would be rude. Writing about everything from what's on around town to work-life balance to restaurants to movies to motherhood, the whole shebang. I guess from the start, I tried to treat this like a business. So we have posted at least two stories every weekday for the last 4.5 years. Even when I went to the UK for 4 weeks, I scheduled 4 weeks of content in the back end ready to push out. But, you know, that mindset and that consistency is what I think has grown the business to the point that we now have over 70,000 readers a month and a social network over 35,000 people. But, you know, that's not to say it happened overnight. I worked two jobs for nearly 3 years so that I could build the site up while still paying the bills. And I was really happy for a time, as long as I could pay my groceries and maybe a cleaner sometimes. I was happy to do that. But in September 2013, I went full-time on the business, which was really scary, but was probably good timing because only a couple of months later, I had both my kids in public school. So suddenly I had $800 a fortnight, to not spend on childcare or anything. I think that was the tipping point. We'd reached that kind of groundswell that it just all went a little bit crazy after that. We now employ 3 full-time and 3 part-time staff, and we can now pay our freelance writers where budget allows, and we plan to be able to pay all of them for everything within the year. We're very, very lucky that we have a group of writers who are part of Her Canberra because they understand what we're trying to do and they want to be part of the community and they have motivations other than money. So, we have writers who write because they want to write and they don't have any opportunity to do that other than writing their briefs in the public service. And let me tell you, it took me about 3 years to actually get my style back after being in the public service for 10 years because you just get so into that, clunky brief writing sort of thing. And they also get to go to cool shows and get free food occasionally and that sort of thing, because I'm actually rather happier at home in my Ugg boots. But I guess I never refer to Her Canberra as an I. It's a we, because I could not have done what I did without this amazing team of women. A really nice side effect is that I now have this amazing group of friends that I didn't have before, because they're all different and they're all lovely, but they're just all really dedicated to making the site something really special. So I guess it's doing things new and differently that drives us, and that's partly because, once again, I get bored easily, and it's just fun. It's more fun doing things differently. Why would you do things the same all the time? In March, we launched Magazine, which is a magazine. We kind of thought, why don't we just call it Magazine? Couldn't come up with a title. But we've got copies down in the Friends Lounge for you if you'd like to take one. And it's the latest addition to our brand stable. And I've had a lot of people say to me, aren't you doing things kind of back to front here? Why wouldn't you, why have you gone from online to magazine where everyone else is going magazine to online? And I think for me it's partly because I've always had a hankering for print. I love it. Partly because I think that no matter how beautiful your website is, images just never look as good as on screen as they do on paper. And I also believe that the more websites and blogs that appear, and the more time we spend attached to our screens, whether that's at work or our smartphones or whatever, the more special something that you can actually hold in your hand and is relaxation and downtime actually becomes. Because, I don't know, there's this kind of strange tension that comes almost when you've got your smartphone. You're always attached to something, whereas this is just, it's taking it back to old school. And I guess for me it's more than just words and pictures on paper, because what's in that magazine that you'll see is it represents a team of people or several teams of people collaborating on a project and sharing ideas and creating something together that celebrates our hometown. Because I did a website pretty much, as a sole operator for a number of years, and this has been so fulfilling, actually, doing a project that involves a group of people coming together and creating something together. So for me, it's more than a website or a magazine. It's a community, and we're always looking for ways to grow it. We partner with organisations around town to stage events that we think will appeal to our readers, because one of the things that was back in that business plan that I did, 4.5 years ago, was that I wanted the site to be able to connect people in real life as well. So these events actually give women a chance to come together and make new friends, which is really important to me. And we're actually going to be introducing later in the year what we're calling sort of speed friendship nights, where people can, you know, get together, come along, make new friends. If they connect with someone, you know, they can make their own plans afterwards. But, you know, you hear so many people are saying, I've moved here, I can't make friends, everyone's really clicky, does anyone want to just, you know, meet up and be my friend? So we want to facilitate that. But we've done things like car maintenance workshops, which I was like, I don't know if this will work, but we sold 25 tickets in like 2 days, so, which is great. We've had interiors evenings where we had Darren Palmer from The Block come and speak. We've had wine tasting tours, which I'd like to do personally, more of those. You know, and we're going to be looking at more opportunities to do that kind of thing. We're fiercely passionate advocates of Canberra and its people. We want to tell the stories of those who live here, and we want to shine a light on all the things that make this such a great place to live. The key to her Canberra success, I think, is that it's filled a gap. They say that necessity is the mother of invention, and that's certainly been the case here. I guess what surprised me as we've grown is the nastiness that can come with competition. I prefer to concentrate on doing what we do as well as we can and not worrying what others do, because I reckon there are enough readers to go around, really, and enough business, and I don't think that people decide, I'm only going to read this and I'm not going to read that. You know, we sort of select, we consume bits of everything. So, you know, I like it when it's all sunshine and lollipops. Unfortunately, as we've become bigger and started to become a real player in the media market, not everyone shares my sentiments. So I've had to put my big girl pants on a bit and realise that you can't be friends with everyone. Many people say to me, you've achieved so much in such a short time, but it doesn't feel like a short time to me, to be quite honest, because I've worked my butt off for 4 years. As I said, you know, we've published every single day for 4.5 years, and I've had 5 days unplugged since 2011. And social media is a hungry beast. It demands to be fed at all hours of the day. It's a slog, but I reckon if you have a dream, the hard work's worth it. And it's true, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And although I do work probably 12 hours every day, my job's flexible, so I can pick my kids up from school. I can, you know, I can work from their swimming lessons. I can be present. I actually find the whole, you know, having to do the get your kids ready, get yourself ready, drop them to childcare, go to work, work, go home and do it all, you know, and do it all over again, far more stressful than doing things the way I do, because my office is where my laptop is. And look, you know, my girls are used to being carted all over the countryside with me for my work, and I think it's actually teaching them valuable lessons about passion and dedication, the fact that it's not always about them, which I think is really important. You know, they need to know that mum has important things that she does as well. And it also shows them how awesome our city is. I reckon they've got to be two of the best educated Canberran kids around. They worked the handmade markets with me last month, I think it was, because my husband was off running some crazy 45-kilometre race somewhere, and one of the girls who was going to be working the store with us couldn't make it. So I said, right, girls, we've got to go to the markets. And they said, is that like a shop? I said, it's kind of like a shop. What are we going to sell? I said, well, we've got the magazines. She's like, oh, that's a bit boring. Can we take cupcakes? I went, no, her camera doesn't do cupcakes, but we do magazines. She went, oh, all right. So she went off to a computer and she decided to make some Her Canberra flyers with her own slogan, which was something about style, life and lots of surprises, and a reader survey, which was like, how much do you like Her Canberra with selections? And so we had the six-year-old doing the reader survey for anyone who came up to the booth, and Olivia was running around the handmade markets with the sort of things of magazines, giving them to everybody. So, you know, they're already proud of Her Canberra and I guess what I do with it, and they're already invested in it. And I said to Liv the other day, you know, if Her Canberra's still going in 10 years, when you're 18, you can take over. She said, yeah, but I'll probably add more animals and birds. I said, all right, well, you can do whatever you like. I don't think balance is the right word for what I do in terms of work and family, because I don't think there's any clear delineation between the two. The nature of the business is 24/7, but we make it work as a family. I mean, my husband also has a really demanding job. But, you know, we really consciously try and make sure that we're both being looked after and that our kids are as well. And although it's demanding, it's given me the opportunity to do something that is truly fulfilling. And, you know, although some of my life is glamorous, you know, we did the red carpet at Fashfest the other night and we get to eat at nice restaurants and that sort of thing, for me, nothing that much has changed. And I don't get off on the whole, you know, fame thing, because it's, I still do the washing and nag my kids about their homework and pack lunches and cook dinners and all that unsexy stuff. None of that's changed. And when it comes down to it, I'm actually a bit of a homebody, which is good news for the contributors who get the theatre tickets and all of that sort of thing thrown their way. I'm not superwoman. I struggle to find time for everything. At the moment, it's my fitness that's being neglected, and that really makes me sad because I love to be active. I wanted to be a dancer from the time I was a little girl, but, you know, Tarcutta didn't really have any dance schools. And my dad refused to pay for lessons when we moved to a larger town, so my sister and I would dance for hours every afternoon in our spare room. Does anyone remember Boney M. Rasputin? Yeah. I could show you some moves now. But I guess, you know, after Sophia was born, I started to look at life through a different lens. All those things I'd been too afraid to do for fear of looking silly suddenly became really important things to cross off my bucket list. So I'd always wanted to be a dancer, and I thought, if I don't do this, I'm going to regret this for the rest of my life. So I set myself a goal of learning to dance by the time I was 40. And Latin music had always moved me. There was just something in it that just made my heart sing. You know how you hear songs and you just, there's just something in you that you just respond to? So when I was asked if I wanted to join a kid-friendly Zumba class, I said, oh, hells yes, I'm there. And it took, I reckon, 5 minutes to just go, yep, this is it, I found my thing. And so I threw myself into that with a passion and became a Zumba instructor at 38. And by the time that 40-year-old milestone rolled around, I'd learned to dance salsa, reggaeton, samba, dancehall, bachata. I'm now thinking Afro-samba. I just need to find the time. But it's my happy place. I love it. There's just something so joyful about moving your body and forgetting about everything else for that moment while you're doing it. So I guess while balance is a continual challenge, I do what I do because I love Canberra. I love connecting people. And I'm energised by always pushing the boundaries. As much as I loved my career in the public service, I love the agility that I can now have. I love that I can have an idea and there are people around me who'll go, awesome, let's do it. Because, you know, there's nothing cooler than being surrounded by like-minded people who all believe in a common goal. For me, the sky's the limit and we're constantly innovating. That's what keeps me interested. I'm usually so crazily paddling that I rarely, I guess, emerge from the doing bubble and reflect on what's come before. But when we launched Magazine in March, we had a shindig at the Hyatt for 150 people. And I don't know, I had this moment where I looked around and just went, holy crap, all these people are here for me, this thing that I built. And I lost it. I had a shocker. I had my speech and blubbered through half of it. Particularly when I thanked my husband for believing in me, you know, 4 years ago. And I spent the night just floating on the positive energy of all the people who were there and who'd helped me along the way. Because as I said before, while I may be the figurehead of Her Canberra, it wouldn't be anything without all the people that contribute to it, and its success belongs to all of us. So I guess even though I haven't taken the direct route to my dreams, and there have been a number of speed bumps along the way, I truly believe that those things are the things that shape the person you are and shape the direction that you take your life. And those childhood dreams that I had of being a magazine editor have now come true. I gave a speech the other day to a group of young professionals, And a few lessons that I said to her, said to them were, you know, to learn from every experience, good and bad, because we should never stop seeking knowledge and we should always try to be better. Leave your ego at the door. I hate ego. I just think you'd be prepared to do the crappy stuff as well as, you know, take the good stuff. Because no matter how high you climb, you need to remember where you started. I truly believe in looking at your career as a winding path, because if I'd have never taken that job with Riverina Citrus Marketing, you know, I never would have learned all those valuable lessons that there's no way I would have learned in the beauty industry in Sydney. Because I think it's looking sideways occasionally, you find these really interesting things that might actually take you where you need to be. And I guess, you know, for me, it's never being afraid to take that chance and to follow that passion. And I think for a lot of public servants, there's that fear factor. You know, they have... I always say that Canberra probably has more moonlighters per capita than anywhere else. We're public servants or we're working in offices or we're doing something else. And at night we're making hats or, you know, designing jewellery or... There are so many Canberrans that have creative pursuits outside that. And sometimes it just takes taking that leap for it to all happen. And the thing that I told these women and I tell my children is that the most important thing is to treat people well. You can trample all sorts of people as you climb the career ladder, but if you treat people well and be kind and be humble and appreciate opportunities and support others in their dreams, it'll come back to you. The reason her Canberra succeeded is because we have always placed a big importance on connecting with people and saying, hey, maybe you guys should get together and we'll help you do this, because, you know, that's the way that it works in this town. So, yeah, these are the lessons that I teach my girls, who are now 6 and 8, and I'm pleased to say that they're growing up beautifully. They are sweet and smart and kind and funny. And, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how proud I am of her Canberra, they're the best things I ever made. So thank you for listening to me today. Happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. That was truly inspiring and very interesting. Has anybody got any questions for Amanda?
You seem to be a very humble and loyal and caring person. I was just wondering whether you'd cross the line and in your future with her at Canberra, explore the disadvantage.
In what sense?
In developing and bettering their skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
Workshops and all that.
Yeah, we'd be happy to explore it. We one of our writers, Nip, and I always struggle to pronounce Nip's last name, so I won't try. Nip is runs Gigi's Flowers. Her sister, Guyana, has Down syndrome.
That's
so
right.
We support that business.
Yeah, good.
And, yeah, no, we're always open to to opportunities.
You're right, good.
I'll give you my card.
Very open-minded. Thank you.
No worries.
Thank you very much. But there was something that wasn't clear to me about, do you have an age limit who you're trying to approach? Because I didn't feel it was towards older women. It was more young or middle-aged. And could you just clarify that?
We try and, in our content, reflect, have content that's of interest to the whole range. So we have writers who are in their early 20s. We have writers who are in their 50s. So we think the content, not every piece of content is going to be interesting to everybody, but we hope that there will be something on the website that will be of interest to someone. So, for example, I'm not interested in Single Women's Guide to Canberra because I'm not single, clearly. But, you know, our younger demographic might be interested in that. We have a lot of motherhood content, which our readers who aren't mothers won't be interested in. So I guess what we try and do is we try and have something for everybody, but we don't pretend that everything that we publish is going to be of interest to everyone. Does that answer your question?
Well, I interpret that as there's an age limit still. You're not looking at some of us.
We don't have an age limit. We try and, I mean, we have the core demographic, just from what we see our readers are 25 to 45. I'm nearly out of that demographic myself. So I know that there are women in their 60s and 70s who read it because they're my mum and my mother's friends and all of that. But, you know, we're always open to having more contributors in the mature space. Give me a call.
There's lots of restaurant guides and also attractions around Canberra for events, aren't there? Like the lovely National Museum of Australia. So the magazine's down in the Friends Lounge, and I'd encourage you all to come down and pick up a copy and ask Amanda some questions down in the Friends Lounge. Could you thank Amanda again, please?
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.